Welcome to the Messy Walk Podcast with Pastor Adam Cook, where our goal is to have a genuine and authentic conversation about the Christian faith journey and what a messy walk with Jesus really looks like. Make sure to follow us for future episodes that will be posted regularly each Wednesday. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hey, welcome to the Messy Walk Podcast. I'm your host, Steph, here with Pastor Adam.
Hey.
And we are back. This is episode 186, and this is actually number 10 out of all the ones we've already covered in this series, Pastor, Please. Crazy.
It's a whole lot of them. We've done a bunch of these episodes so far, and we only got like two more left, right?
Yeah.
And so
this one and the next one.
Yeah. And so this episode here is right before Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Hope you have a nice holiday and time off and whatever it is with your family. And celebrating the real reason for the season and Jesus' birth. And we just hope the best for you this holiday. And we will obviously take the Wednesday off for Christmas. So we won't have an episode come out on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And then we won't have an episode come out on New Year's Day either, unless we end up getting the blooper reel, right? Which we might. So we'll see if John can work on that. That would be a good one for New Year's Day to come out, if that's the case. And if not, we'll see you after the first of the year. And we have one more to wrap up in this series when we come back from the first of the year. So
yep.
If we'd have planned a little better, it could have ended today, but we didn't. So we'll have an extra one come out at the number 187 will come out.
About
3 weeks. Second Wednesday of January, basically, right? So The first Wednesday of January, I believe, is New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And so we'll do it the second week. So, well, we've done a bunch of these things so far. And Steph, why don't you recap some of the ones we've done real fast? Some of the different categories.
Sure. Let me try to get myself together over here. So we did... quit being fearful of doubts, don't church hop, share your faith more often, get counseling earlier than you think, read the Bible, social media is a bigger problem than you think, don't date a person who doesn't share your faith at close to the same level,
yep.
Don't get married without premarital counseling.
Yep, we've done a bunch.
And wait, attend church regularly.
Yeah, attend church regularly.
That was the other one.
Yeah, so far, I was just telling Steph, I went and binge listened to some of them. I don't really like to listen to myself.
Yeah, I don't either.
But you have to at some point just to make sure that what you're actually doing makes sense. And so I went and listened to a couple of them, several of them all back to back to back the other day. And the one we did a couple episodes ago on social media is really, really good.
I enjoyed when we recorded it.
It's really, really good. So yeah. We have a couple. I don't know why I have a little bit of a cough. But yeah, so today we're going to knock out... let me get my paper straight. I don't know what I did with it. There it is. We're going to knock out another one that has to do with relationships. I actually experienced this again today. Because if you remember in this Pastor Please series, what we're kind of doing is sharing all the things where it's like, man, I see people constantly walking down the same paths to the same pitfalls that would be awesome if they could avoid those things to keep from a lot of pain and suffering. And a lot of those end up involving relationships. And so these pastor pleas are, please don't do these things, especially with relationships. And I just sat with a couple today that are going down this path. And it was like a real life, even though we're recording it right now, but it was a real life conversation of, please don't live together before you get married, right? Like If you feel this pressure, and I know it's a natural thing. I get it. Most people's excuse or justification for living together before marriage comes from some pressure, and it's mostly centered around financial.
Yeah. Right?
And so most people end up saying, especially now, most people end up saying, well, two houses, two rents, two power bills, whatever. If we lived together, we'd only have one, we'd have more money. You know what I mean? And I get it. I understand there's financial pressures. What I would say back to that is then just get married faster, right? Mm-hmm. Then just go ahead and get married quicker. And I'm not just saying these things from some weird standpoint of, Let me toe the line of what the scripture says. I do believe the scripture is very specific about us and how we are to remain holy and sexually pure in lots of ways. And living together before we married would be a way that we would violate what the Bible actually calls us to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not coming at this this plea from that standpoint, because there's all other kind of reasons for that. Because most of the time, what you would, if you come from, hey, don't do this because the Bible says don't do this. Well, it's really really easy to ignore that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so while I do believe that, I do believe that the scripture is very specific in us being maintaining our purity, and that those things need to happen within the context of biblical marriage. Typically, those aren't good enough reasons for me to share with somebody to get them not to do it, right? And so because something like financial ends up being such a felt need that you'll just compromise what you really should do and what the Bible calls you to do. Mm-hmm. To help with that felt need of less bills and those kind of things. And so I get the pressures and the reasons for it. My answer back to that would be, then you need to get married faster, right? If you're willing to move in and cohabitate and share your bills with somebody, then you should just go ahead and share your whole life with somebody.
Yeah.
And that should be the case, right? And especially if you're older, you need to understand something. You're older, you know pretty quickly whether or not you can build a life and be married to this person that you're with, right? Mm-hmm. And so don't play around with it. That's the case, right? We did a series on this, not a series, one of these on this in here somewhere. I can't remember which one it was, but it was about relationships again. It was this idea of, it might have been don't date somebody whose faith's not the same as yours. Uh-huh. Like, you know pretty early on if this is somebody that you're going to be building a relationship with long term. And if it has those things in it, then why not go ahead and get married instead of shacking up, right? And there's lots of reasons for it. And so what I decided to do this time, instead of telling you all the biblical mandates for sexual purity and holiness and the fact that sharing a home and a bed is something that is for marriage, I thought we'd go a different route and talk about the fact that that statistics tell you that it is not good and healthy for you to be living together before marriage. See, a lot of people think, well, we'll save the money, but then also we can kind of, we'll be better for marriage because we'll already have figured out how to live together. And it's actually the opposite. So the stat on divorce for this is that you are 31% more likely to divorce if you live together before marriage than if you didn't.
Wow.
So that's a big increase, because you got to remember, mm-hmm. if it's a first marriage in current day America, you're already sitting at an almost 50% chance of divorce. But if you live together first, now you have increased that 50% by another 31%. That doesn't mean that you are 80% likely to get divorced. It just means you've increased that 50 now by another 30. And it's pretty intense. Like, it's already hard to stay married, right? And if you go living together before marriage, you kind of get falsely lured, and I think this is the enemy's role. You get falsely lured into thinking that this will help us stay married when we do get married, but actually it will increase the likelihood that you get divorced. And I have worked with hundreds and hundreds of couples, and I can tell you that this is the case. The couples that I work with that go, and they're more than you think, that go, hey, we're going to try to do this right. We're going to try to do this by the Bible and by the standards that God gives us. We're going to try our best not to be sexually active until we're married. We're going to try not to live together. We're going to try not to combine our lives together in that way until we're married. Those couples in real life that I work with, they stay married. The ones that live together before they're married, those are the ones that I see and I walk with daily that end up getting divorced. So you're much more likely to be divorced in that case. And I'll give you some reasons. So you can pull this up. These stats are all non-faith linked stats. So they don't really involve, we're not talking about a bunch of Christian studies here. We're talking real life stuff, that there's some different reasons why that would be. So why is it that you have a 31% chance of being more likely to divorce if you've lived together or not? And so there's like five or six different ones. So the first one they call the cohabitation effect. And what they say is that research is showing that couples who live together before marriage are less satisfied with their marriage and more likely to divorce. So because they've lived together first, later on they end up less satisfied with their marriage, because it's not as big of a jump from living together to being married. And so you get this thing in your head of, well, when we get married, this will be different. But you've already been living together all this time. So you end up being less satisfied when you're actually married than you would have been if you would have done it all at one time. You'd have moved in together. They call it the cohabitation effect. You can Google it and look at it. It's kind of interesting because I think naturally we would assume the opposite. We would assume, well, these people already know how to live together. So when they get married, what's the difference? Well, there is a different level of expectation that comes when you get married. There's a different feel, a different vibe. And so people report being less satisfied. In other words, they feel like marriage would have been more. If something better would have happened than what they were doing before. And you realize that you've sort of already settled into this cohabitation pattern. That's the first one. The next one is that when people have a high number of cohabitating partners. So if you have not, and we're not talking sexually necessarily, right? But let's face it. When we cohabitate together, we're probably going to be having sex together. Let's just be real, right? But if you have lived with more romantic partners, that will increase the risk of divorce. And so if you end up living with someone and it not working out and you break up, then you live with somebody else and it doesn't work out and you break up, and you know every relationship you come to, you go, okay, I want to take our relationship to the next level. And that next level involves moving in together. When you begin to have more and more partners that you cohabitated with, now your divorce rate is going up too. And I think that's caused by a couple different things the studies point out. It's caused by a more difficult romantic or family life, strained economic circumstances, and then higher odds of having children with different partners. So a lot of marriages that don't work out as well if you have children with different people. Right. So when you get that sort of messy relationship mixed in there, it can lead you to having a less satisfied marriage and more conflict. Right. So it would make sense that if you had a bunch of people you lived together with before you got married, several of them, that you're more likely to actually end up having a baby with one of those. And then when you do get married, now you've got this messy blended family. Right. And there's nothing wrong with blended families. God does some amazing stuff with blended families. But yeah. But it makes it more tense and harder, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you've got to deal with custody issues and ex-wives, ex-husbands, or not even ex-wives and husbands, but like this baby daddy or this baby mama or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden you've got a whole different level of strain. And if you live with more partners, you're more likely to end up having children together or whatever. It's an interesting kind of thing. The next one is that there's a lack of a commitment. So what they mean by that is when you choose to live together, you are naturally choosing a less of a commitment. Right? Right. So if you choose to live together, you're saying, I don't want to legally marry you. That's a big commitment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to commit my whole life to you. I just want to commit this current season and this current apartment and this current house. So what you're doing is you think you're taking your relationship to the next level of commitment. But what you're really doing is choosing a smaller, lesser commitment. And when you do that, that is the opposite of marriage. And so it usually doesn't lead to more commitment. It usually leads to less commitment. So you would think, okay, we took this step here, but because you chose a lesser commitment the first time, it doesn't usually lead to, oh, let's be more committed than that and lead to marriage. It usually leads to less commitment. In other words, one of the reasons that you chose to live together also was not just to take your relationship to the next level, but it was also a, let me tip my toe in the water and see if this is going to work out, right? Versus what marriage is I don't have a choice for this to work out, right? Like we've committed each other fully and we've got to make this thing work out.
We got
right?
each other's back.
So when you choose some sort of lesser commitment, you're much more likely to take that to a deeper level of commitment. You also get comfortable with a lesser level of commitment. And so if you're hedging risk or something, it's less risky in your mind to cohabitate together or live together, which is always going to lead you to going, well, I don't know if I want to take that other risk because I feel real comfortable in the risk that I've already taken versus jumping on in the pool, right?
Yeah.
It's very similar to like, I mean, if you've ever gotten into a cold pool, Steph, like, you know, the water's cold.
Yeah.
Well, the best thing you could do is actually just jump on in the pool fully. Get head under and all those things. And you would commit to doing that fully and you will be cold. You will be warmer fast, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But if you go in and go, oh, the water's cold, so I'm going to just go in a little bit. Then I'm going to go in a little bit. at some point you've chosen a lesser level of commitment. So now you are much less likely to actually dive fully into the pool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you'll hang out, oh no, this is as far as I can go type feel, right? And the same thing plays out with this. It's a commitment versus less commitment versus higher commitment. So if you do something that requires less commitment, you're much less likely to go fully in, right? It's the same thing with following Jesus. Like, one of the best things you can do when God calls you to do something is go all in on it, not just, let me just try. Like, one of the last episode of this series we're going to talk about is going to be the money one, because nobody ever talks about that, so we save it for last. And when we're talking to people about tithing, it's the same exact issue. It is a mental game of commitment. And so if you like, okay, I believe, you personally believe that the Bible's calling me to tithe, right? And a tithe is the first 10% of your income. It's not 10%, it's the first 10. Mm-hmm. If you go, well, I don't know if I can fully do that, so let me just test it out by going 1%. The likelihood of you ever actually getting to 10% is very low, right? But if you go, God's calling me to do it, I'm going to jump all in, then you're much more likely to stay and sustain that full commitment, right? So these little bitty baby steps end up getting to a point where you end up stopping. And that's what happens with cohabitating. That's why that choosing that lesser commitment actually doesn't lead to a full commitment. Most people who live together do not get married. So if you're telling yourself, well, we're going to live together and get married someday, most of them don't. Most of those relationships actually don't last. And I'm talking statistically, but I'm also talking from hundreds of couples worth of experience.
Yeah.
That most of the time, those people either continue to live together and they don't get married, even though they originally thought they would, or they break up. Because it's much easier to break up when you're just living together, right? It's a whole different ballgame to break up when you're married. So it's all about these commitment levels. And so if you're with someone and you're like, I want to be with this person, they want to be with me, you should jump all the way in and you'll be much less likely to be divorced versus taking these little bitty baby steps along the way. It's an interesting thing. The next one they point out is combining finances. Combining finances with someone that you're not married to can be a legal nightmare and can set up a competitive dynamic. You do not want to ever combine finances with any human being that you're not married to, right? You don't ever, when you become an adult, you don't ever want to do that. And we're not just talking about like romantic partners here. Like, you don't want to combine your finances with your parent or your brother or sister when you guys are legal adults, because it is a nightmare. So if you, and I have watched this happen, if you are living together with someone, you usually are combining finances in some way. At the bare minimum, your names are both on a lease or your names are both on a mortgage or whatever, right? If that person who you are living with dies, you are in a world of trouble. So let's just say that you you bought a house with somebody that you were just living with, right? You weren't married. If that person dies, you now own a house as a partner with their next of kin, whoever that is. So, like, you now all of a sudden overnight own a house with your new business partner who is your boyfriend's mama.
Oh, wow.
Or your boyfriend's brother or your girlfriend's dad instantly. There's no real protection over any of those things. You really can't do anything about it. The only way that could be different is if you happen, that person happened to have a will. But people who are cohabitating together hardly ever have a will. And so that's not going to be the case. And so now all of a sudden you are tied to a person you didn't pick in this situation, right? And you're tied to a person you weren't married to their child or anything like that. It's a sticky situation. It can be really, really bad. And I've actually seen it happen lots of times. It also can be quite competitive. So if you are not married and you're joining finances, now all of a sudden there's more of a quibble, a time for argument between, well, I make this much money, you make this much money, so I call the shots on this and you don't call the shots on this. Whereas if you're married, there is this understanding of we that doesn't exist fully as just couples living together. And I've watched this play out a lot. Now, the last one is the idea of a cost of a wedding. The excitement and joy of getting married can be lost if you're already playing house. right? So if you are already living together, this natural excitement that ought to be there about your wedding and those kind of things can kind of be lost along the way. And you can try to make up for it by spending too much money on a wedding, right? You can get up on, well, I want to, you know, I want to make up for the fact that we've been together for a while. We'll make this a big deal, right? You feel like you have to make the wedding an even bigger deal because you've been living together. And so you end up spending more money than you should, and it causing problems there all, you know, once again in a marriage. So, this is just a quick little thing I found, but there's lots and lots of reasons why it's a really bad idea outside of the Bible telling you it's a bad idea. What's interesting is, if you will pay attention, there are so many things that we have learned in the last 100 years in sociology and psychology that point to things about our mental health, our living arrangements, what's healthy for us, what's not healthy for us, all these things that the Bible's been saying for thousands of years. I mean, it's just true. You know, the stuff that we know now about cohabitating with each other, that it's not really the healthiest of things, the Bible's been talking about forever. The things that we know now about the mind, right? The things we know about neural pathways and all this stuff, the Bible talks about these things in detail. Not the scientific parts of it, but like, you know, the idea of that we've obviously discovered through psychology now that you need to pay attention to. We said this in the social media episode. You need to pay attention to what you put in your mind, because what you actually put in your mind, what you see and look at all the time, affects your thoughts.
True.
Right? Well, we know that, scientifically proven now. The Bible's been saying that for thousands of years. And so this is just yet another way that Scripture is leading you to what is a healthy and whole life. And that involves, don't combine your life with someone who you have not committed to in marriage and they have not committed to you in marriage. And I'll be real blunt with you. Where this comes up a lot is there's a lot of women who want to be with that person, want that person to love them and want to only love them and want to marry them, but that person won't do it. So they compromise and they move in, thinking that someday this guy is going to go, I need to marry this woman. And what ends up happening in the background is she sits around frustrated, and there's this specific frustration that's kind of brewing because he's going, what do we need to get married for? We're already living together. We're already together. We're already practically married anyway. It's just a piece of paper. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. It's just a piece of paper. We don't need that to be married. And what she's really hoping for is somebody who will say, no, I want to join my life with you. And I'm going to do that in the way that the Bible prescribes, but also the way that the government recognizes. I'm going to join my life with you in actual marriage legally, right? I'm going to bind myself legally to you. And marriage is more than just sharing a house. When we talk about what we've been called to do in marriage and what I think most people want in a spouse is someone who is joined to us in every aspect. It's all things are we. There's a joke that I hear all the time that the minute you become married, you become French. It's we, we. All the time. it's we, right? Yeah. Everything is we. And so you can't be in a healthy relationship and only be partially committed.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
It's just like if you're married and you don't combine finances, well, we have a problem there too.
Because
everything is supposed to be there together.
That's right.
We become, the vows Valerie and I took is we become one flesh. And you can take that literally, but you can also take it figuratively, that we become united as one in everything. That means we're united as one in our money and our goals, our hopes, our dreams, how we live, how we raise our kids. You know what I mean? Like all those things are in common, and we make those decisions as we. If you start off your relationship halfway committing, it does not bode well for full commitment long term. Those two people will end up off the tracks. One person will be yearning for further commitment, and the other person will be going, I don't really need to do that. We're already committed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's this big wedge that grows. And there's enough things to derail marriages that you don't need to add this one to it, because this is a really easy one to avoid, right? If you feel this, if you're with somebody right now and you feel this financial crunch to move in together or whatever, and that financial thing is real, and you want to be with each other, just get married.
Yeah.
Right? Just go on and combine. Like, we had a couple not that long ago. I love these people. They had moved in together. I told them not to. They moved in together. Next thing you know, they're pregnant. Right? And so then it was, hey, why don't you just get married? Right? You're already living together and you already got a baby. And they were both kind of hesitant on getting married, even though they had already united themselves in the place they were living, and they had united themselves with a kid. Right? So it's like, what's the holdup here? And I really do think it comes back to that thing we talked about before a lot, is when you take a step of lesser commitment, you're much less likely to take the full step of commitment, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you'll just jump in from the beginning, you'll probably be much better off. And the stats prove it, right? The stats prove that if you, people who do these things in a certain order are much more likely to stay married, but also much more likely to not be in poverty. I don't have these stats in front of me, so I can't quote them, but if you go look, there are these four or five specific things that can go to almost 90-some percent certainty to determine whether somebody's going to be in poverty or not in America. And they involve doing things in order. Like, if you graduate school and you are X age before you have a child and you get married before you have the child, your chances of being in poverty are almost gone completely, just by these certain things being in order. And isn't it funny how that once again goes back to the scriptures that has been telling us this stuff for thousands and thousands of years? You know what right. I mean? Very practical. The Bible is extremely practical. The way we should see things like don't live together is not the Bible has some rule. It should be the Bible has a guardrail for you.
Yeah, it's always right? for your good.
It is a guardrail.
Yeah.
You got to look at things from the scripture and even things directly from Jesus as not a rule to follow that's trying to keep you from having fun. It's
right.
It's a guardrail to keep you from going off the tracks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's really what it is. Like, you know, and I know this with my children, especially my older one who's getting older. My son just turned 13. My oldest is about to graduate school. When we put rules in place with them, it's not because mom and dad want to keep you from having fun. We love you more than you ever know. We want you to enjoy life and do things that we never did. Like, we really want that for you. But the rules are in place so you don't crash off the side of the road, right? So you don't run your life into a ditch.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not to keep you from having fun. And that's what the Bible is kind of pointing. It's kind of all these things like don't live together before you get married, or keeping the preserving the sanctity and holiness of your sexuality within the bounds of marriage, it's not rules, it's guardrails to keep you from wrecking your life. And that's what these pastor pleas really are. What they really are is they're guardrails. They're like, please don't do these things so you can stay here in the path, right? And I think that's the way you got to look at the stuff in the scriptures, is especially with stuff like this. This is not, the Bible is not modern, and it's modern for people to, you know, live together, and those things are old, outdated rules to follow. No, they're not. They're not.
If people just even realize what they were saying sometimes.
Yes.
If they would just realize, they're just setting themselves up.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. We're like, well, that's, you know, Adam, that's so old, and that doesn't go with our current culture. Human beings have had this problem for forever.
Okay? Yes, exactly.
Right? We're the same. All right. Now, we may live in different times and have different access to stuff, and we may have better knowledge now on things. We may have much more knowledge. But just because we have more knowledge of stuff does not mean we have more wisdom, right?
Right.
I mean, you can have all the knowledge. We know everything now, scientifically, about so many things having to do with human psychology and sociology. That doesn't mean that we're taking that knowledge and walking in wisdom with it. You know, the Bible is giving you wise. It's not just about knowledge. It's about wise ways to live, godly ways that keep you from wrecking your life. And this is one of them. If you want to set yourself up for a higher chance of divorce and a harder road to parenting, to actual marriage, and all those things, then live together. Because that's exactly what it does. But if you want to kind of set yourself up for things to go better, then you want to avoid those things and stay within the guardrail. Cohabitating is a bad idea on so many fronts. We didn't even get to all the stuff. I could talk about this all day. And even from a standpoint of seeing, not just a bunch of studies and crap, but from actually seeing it play out all the time, right?
Yeah.
Right now, the vast majority of people that I know, and they're even Christians, so they're Christians, they are all making the decision to live together before they're married, and it is a bad decision. As a pastor, I'm telling you, I'm begging you right now, don't do it. If he's going to break up with you because you won't move in with him, then he was going to break up with you at some point anyway.
Yeah.
Right? If he's not willing to marry you, but he's willing to move in with you and have a baby with you and combine finances with you, then it won't going to work out anyway, because he would then be willing to actually legally commit to you, right, and bring God into the middle of it and join together as one. Right. Mm-hmm. And if he ain't willing to do those things, let me just tell you what is being said to you. The Holy Spirit is saying to you, he ain't the one, girl. Right. Mm-hmm. Move on. And it's funny about men. Men are interesting. Most men know very, very quickly whether or not they want to marry that woman they're with or not. So you've been with somebody for years who ain't proposing to you. He knew pretty early on whether he wanted to marry you or not. And if he ain't done it, it means he ain't going to do it, or he don't want to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, just from experience. So the plea here is, you ain't going to listen to me, but the plea is, don't do this. Don't cohabitate. Don't live together before you get married. And I'm not coming from some Bible thumper standpoint. I'm just telling you from real life experience and from sociology experts.
Statistics.
Yeah, statistics. Don't do it. So, but people got to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
That's a tough topic.
The best thing we said on this episode for all of us to think about, even if this is not your issue, because there'll be a bunch of people who listen to this episode who this doesn't even apply to them, right? Like
right.
You and I are married, right? Mm-hmm. Not to each other. Like, we're married separately.
Yeah, they knew what you meant.
Yeah, you know what I mean? This don't really apply to us,
right?
We're not going to live with nobody. We're married. But the best thing, the takeaway here for everybody listening is this understanding of commitment levels. Don't choose, when it's time to commit to something, don't choose lesser commitment. It will only lead to lesser commitment.
Yeah.
Choose full commitment. If God's calling you to something, leading you to something, commit fully. Jump in the end of the pool and the water gets warmer much faster than you stepping in, you know, piece by piece by piece. That's the part that everybody can take away from an episode like this is when God's calling you to something, commit to it fully, not just a little bit, because a little commitment will just continue to lead to a little or not full commitment.
Yeah, and he's also not saying just marry anybody.
No, not at all.
Just making sure y'all know that.
Right, not
so
at
don't
all.
Do that and say, Pastor Adam said
yeah,
that.
Don't do that, right? I mean, of course, you got to discern,
yeah,
right?
Use wisdom.
Yeah. Now, if you're willing to move in with somebody and you're willing to do all that, then y'all probably ought to have the marriage conversation, don't you think?
Right.
If you're willing to move in and combine finances and all this stuff and then
if it's going serious,
and having sex together and combining everything like that, you might want to talk about marriage. Because why are you willing to combine all that if you ain't willing to get married? You know, don't make no sense to me. But anyway.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Pastor Adam.
This is a blunt one.
We're nervous over here.
We saved this one to the last one, or last couple of them for a reason. So.
Yeah, we saved the tougher topics to the end. But I always find they're so filled with truth.
Yeah.
It's not a finding, it's just filled with truth. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And you know, the truth sometimes is hard to hear in the face, especially in the face of whatever culture is driving you to.
Yep.
And the culture now is driving to do whatever you want, right? Whatever makes you happy. And marriage is not that important, and God being in the middle of it's not that important, and you know that culture's driving you to that, right? And so
right.
The truth is harder to hear when the culture is screaming, "Why does the church care about this? This is not that big a deal," right? It is a. I'm telling you, it's a
actually
big deal.
It is, and that's why the enemy's trying to split them all up.
It's a real big.
He's trying
deal.
To keep you from what God, you know, designed.
It's a real big deal, right? I mean,
yeah.
if anything else told you these statistics and you actually cared about them, you'd probably pay attention to them. Like if you were sitting around looking at a car you were going to buy, and you know there was this stat that says if you do this with your car, you're much more likely to wreck. You probably wouldn't do that thing. And this is the exact same thing here.
Yeah.
Right? No matter what the culture tells you, right? Oh, that car's cool, so it's okay. But if you do this, then you're much more likely to wreck it and die. Then you probably shouldn't do it. And maybe you wouldn't. It's the same thing with this, right? Stats alone should say, pull back here. Set yourself up to be the most successful in marriage and relationship you can be. And the most successful in marriage and relationship, if you want that relationship you're in to be successful, the most successful ones follow a very specific pattern, right? We're going to date. We're going to court. We're gonna save ourselves for marriage the best that we can. I know people screw up. I'm not saying
yeah.
No, right? We're going to try to maintain holiness. We're going to get married first before we start combining our life together. That way we're combining after we've committed, not before we've committed. That's what sets you up for the most successful marriage and relationship.
Yeah.
And that's statistically proven, not just Bible stuff. So.
And I will say this because I feel like there's a female that needs to hear it.
Yeah.
You are loved by God and you don't have to do anything extra
yep.
to have the life that he wants you to have.
Absolutely.
You don't have to make anyone stay. You don't have to do anything
that's
going to hurt you in the long run. So
I agree.
God's telling you. So
I agree. Anyway. Good word, Steph. Good word. Anyway, that's all we got.
That's all we got.
So Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Absolutely, because we won't see you or hear it talk to you or whatever.
For like
a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll see you after the new year in the next episode comes out in 2025.
That's crazy.
Crazy. And you might get a blooper reel in here. I don't know.
And let's be real. We've said some silly things this year. I really don't know what will be in it.
We had one just now before this episode.
Yeah, and I already forgot it, so.
Well, you said you were oily.
Okay, y'all. We gotta go.
See you later.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Messy Walk Podcast with Pastor Adam Cook. Make sure to follow us for future episodes that will be posted regularly each Wednesday. Have a good day.